Welcome to Bruderhof Radio. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. For all the coverage it received in the mainstream media, it's hard to imagine a bigger farce than last year's Y2K bug. Hard on the heels of Monica Lewinsky, this particular round of needless talk seemed an appropriate end to a decade where politics and porn fused more successfully on American TV than ever. Still, the need for infotainment, as it is called, does not appear to be dissipating. So far this year, the biggest splash in international news came in early February when Austria's newly elected coalition government took power. Following a failed attempt to unite with the Liberal Social Democratic Party, the Conservative People's Party invited the right-wing Freedom Party to form a ruling coalition. It was this party and its leader, Jörg Haider, that thrust an otherwise routine exchange of power into the international spotlight. Within days, the other 14 nations of the European Union froze bilateral ties with Austria, and Israel withdrew its ambassador. Thousands of Austrians hit the streets in protest of the new government, and Haider's face appeared on the front of every magazine and newspaper across Europe. In general, these actions were considered a response to the Freedom Party's well-publicized support of popular nationalist and anti-immigration sentiments. In addition, Haider himself had made comments on several occasions praising Adolf Hitler's, quote, sound employment policies and even going so far as to defend the efficiency of Nazi stormtroopers. Since then, Haider has both admitted to and apologized for these remarks. Still, it's difficult to view the overwhelming reaction of the international community without some latent skepticism. While Haider must be held accountable for his personal statements, the world press, in covering these events, has failed to examine general European xenophobia and anti-immigration policies with the same harsh light that Austria is now subjected to. Today, on Bruderhof Radio, we examine the sincerity of Europe's reaction to Austria. Quite apart from Haider's anti-immigration posturing, it is essential that European nations, which now take the moral high ground, come to terms with their own troubled history of racism and xenophobia. Yosef Livni, a high-ranking Israeli diplomat, explains the dilemma his government faced in responding to Austria's new government.
As you all know, the State of Israel came into existence barely 3 years after the defeat of Nazi Germany. As the world and Israel learned of the horrible nightmare that was the Holocaust, so did our commitment to fight the struggle against anti-Semitism become more solid. The fate instills in us the determination to stand firm against all displays of xenophobia and anti-Semitism. Consequently, we cannot and indeed will not acquiesce when someone, anyone, anywhere, attempts to belittle the horrors or those who perpetrated them. Equally, we shall not turn a blind eye when such political forces are considered legitimate allies. We have no desire to intervene in the internal affairs of other countries. And yet, the lessons of the past serve as our guiding light. We believe that the inclusion of extremist right-wing elements in government legitimizes them, and this is something we cannot agree to.
Israel's stance is understandable, given Europe's history of anti-Semitism. But was the European Union justified in freezing relations with Austria? While American and European mass media have, over the past months, trumpeted the, quote, return of Austrian fascism, Dr. Harold Miltner, the Austrian Consul General in New York City, says that such a judgment is premature. He argues that the response to Haider has been overly harsh.
There will be no return to fascism in Austria. There are no fascist parties in Austria. There are no fascist politicians in Austria. Fascism came to its end in Austria in 1945, and after that, we introduced very strict legislation forbidding any kind of revival of fascism, and this legislation has been applied over the years. I didn't come up here to defend Haider in any way, but I want to make one thing clear. Austria 2000 is not Austria in 1938, or in the years between 1938 and 1945. So to compare today's situation to what has happened between 38 and 45, I believe would do enormous injustice to those people who suffered through the years of 38 to 45. You should go to Austria and see what is happening there. It is a democracy, and it is a working democracy. Of course, some people support Haider's party for various reasons, but even his party cannot be put into the same group as those people who are responsible for what happened between 38 and 45.
An Austrian by birth, Professor Karen Andriolo teaches at the State University of New York. She says that while the censure of Austria may be warranted, the problem of xenophobic right-wing parties extends beyond Austria to many other European countries. The European Union, she says, has no right to judge Austria when right-wing parties in Denmark and Switzerland hold 15 to 20% of parliamentary seats.
The question which I am interested in broaching here is the question of the European Union sanctions towards Austria and the world reaction towards Austria in this issue. And the main question that people have asked was, is it an overreaction or not? And I would like to give you my takes on this. I think it is an overreaction, and it creates problems. However, I also think that one must not brush it off and commit underreaction. In contrast, I think that it is a justifiable wake-up call for Austria, and I hope Austria takes it in the spirit, and that it also means the European Union will have new interesting issues and tasks to face that are being hinted at by this issue. Let me first make some explanations with respect to what I consider overreactions. Overreaction in the sense of that Austria is not the only bad guy out there, that the right-wing populism that I think is clearly expressed by the votes that Haider and the Freedom Party received, that this right-wing populism is not exclusive to Austria. That the deep antipathy to ethnic diversity is something which we find in other European countries as well. Another overreaction, I think, is that Haider is Hitler. Well, Haider is not Hitler, but it's bad enough that he's Haider, I think. Another overreaction that has been pointed out by many people who commented on the situation, intellectuals, students of the European situation, people who are not Austrians, is that it smells of hypocrisy, that the European Union has not always occupied the high moral ground so quickly and so intensely.
Hans-Georg Betz has written a number of books on the rise of right-wing parties in Europe. Betz, a German citizen who teaches European studies at New York University, has followed the story of Haider's Freedom Party closely. According to Betz, Haider's appeal is not much different from that of fringe parties elsewhere in Europe or America. Despite Austria's low unemployment and high standard of living, Haider's rhetoric drew voters seeking an alternative.
Radical right-wing parties have been very successful, not only in Europe, but also in other parts of the world, in Canada, for example. If you go into Pat Buchanan's website, you see America First. It's not an Austrian phenomenon. It's a phenomenon of advanced industrial societies, which are in a transition to a new kind of information-based post-industrial society. Now, the question is, what are we trying to explain? Are we trying to explain why people vote for somebody like Haider? It's very simple. They vote because they don't like immigrants. Nobody in Europe likes immigrants. As a matter of fact, nobody in any country likes immigrants, including places like India, Australia, or Canada. Secondly, a lot of governments are seen as non-responsive to the citizens, and if you're following what Bush and what Gore are doing these days, I mean, there are some very good reasons why people don't think the governments are responding to them. There's a general malaise, which is particularly bad in Europe, because unemployment is very high, because people are scared of globalization and in the information technology, and because you're afraid of open trade and all of these things which they entail. Now, the question for me is not really what explains why these people vote for Haider. It's more why not everybody votes for Haider, quite frankly. But it is why Haider is saying certain things. Why is Haider actually saying that the Waffen-SS people are kind of respectable people? And I think there are some very good reasons for that, which have a lot to do with the hypocrisies which exist not only in Austria, but also in Austria and in other countries in Western Europe, which have never really dealt with the fact that they were deeply implicated in the crimes of the Second World War. And that's not just the Austrians. That also includes the French. Mitterrand, President François Mitterrand, had a very close friend who was a war criminal, and he held loyal to him until his death. It has a lot in Belgium. The Flemish part of Belgium has never come to terms with the collaboration they did with the Nazis. In Italy, there are some very dubious statements when it comes to fascism. In Germany, there's a lot of people who would say to you, well, after 45 years, we should not talk about these things any longer, let's go on. Now, in Austria, a lot of these things were particularly bad. They were particularly bad because the Austrians, in 1943, were told they were the first victims of Hitler, and therefore they didn't have to really face the fact that a lot of Austrians were involved in the Nazi crimes. After the war, they were a neutral country which was coddled by both the Soviets and the United States. And again, they didn't have to deal with the fact what they had done during the Second World War. And so in Austria, there was never any kind of confrontation with the past. Now, I don't want to condone what he says, but in a sense, I do understand it. And I understand it because I know, being a German, a lot of my country people, and I understand basically how they feel about the Second World War and what they have to say about the Second World War.
Indeed, as Betz says, Haider's anti-Semitic remarks must be seen for what they are, and he should rightly be challenged by anyone who knows the horrors of the Holocaust. This much has been covered in mainstream press. What has not gotten as much coverage is the hypocrisy of politicians who criticize the anti-immigration platform of the Austrian Freedom Party while supporting similar initiatives in their own countries, for example, Denmark, France, and Germany.
Now, I want to connect that actually to something which I think, which I find particularly appalling about this whole Austrian kind of thing, and this is that this is just one instance of a more general European hypocrisy. I mean, you, as you pointed out, nobody in Europe wants immigrants. Now, among the first ones who were against immigration in Europe was not the Freedom Party, was not the Front National. It were communists in France. It was socialists in countries like Switzerland or in Austria, who were the first ones to play the immigration card, who said the boat is full, for very good reasons. They got the support of working-class voters, and working-class voters don't want immigrants. They feel threatened by them, and it was the left who started anti-immigration things. Now, I find it particularly bizarre when, for example, a President Chirac says against Haider that he's xenophobic. Here is a man who in an election campaign said that foreigners stink, and who had a minister of the interior, Charles Pasqua, who said in a statement, which you can read in Le Monde on the front page, we are going towards zero immigration, immigration zero. This is a French statement, official kind of policy. I find it particularly appalling of a European Union who condemns Haider about xenophobia and anti-immigration kind of things, and then you have a Danish government which 2 days later, under a socialist Prime Minister Rasmussen, pushes a law through government, through parliament, in the Danish parliament, which restricts very, very severely any kind of family reunification in Denmark. And this in a country which prides itself for being a liberal government. I find it particularly appalling in a country like Germany, which is outraged, where you have a political party like the Christian Union, Democratic Union, which a year ago, in the state of Hesse, ran an election campaign on the basis of, we don't want dual citizenship for our foreign citizens in this country, and where they had a huge a campaign against foreigners in the country. The problem in Europe is that we don't have an open debate about immigration. We have no public debate about immigration. It's full of hypocrisies and lies. And all of these people who now basically are pointing their fingers at Haider are the very same people who in the past made exactly the same kind of statements. Now, I understand why the European Union is doing that. In a sense, what the European Union is trying to project, and ever since Kosovo, it has been trying to do that, is that the European Union is more than just an economic community. It is a community of values, eine werte Gemeinschaft, as the Germans would say. And people like Joschka Fischer made that very clear during the Kosovo campaign, in which he gave one statement after the other, saying basically that we Europeans shouldn't get involved in Europe in Kosovo because this is a genocide, and we Europeans should have learned something from our history. And I absolutely agree with him. But then I have to say, then these rules should apply to everybody. And as far as I'm concerned, these days they are not. The Austrian government and Jörg Haider, who, by the way, is not even in government, he's the governor of Carinthia, a trivial state where he has absolutely no power, is being singled out for things which in Europe, quite frankly, you can read every day in the newspapers.
You're listening to Bürgerhof Radio, broadening the bounds of discourse. We'd like to hear your feedback. Call us at 1-800-778-8461 or visit us on the internet at www.freespeech.org/Bürgerhof. Again, that's 1-800-778-8461 or www.freespeech.org/Bürgerhof. Remarkably, Israel seems to have a better understanding of the situation than many European nations. According to Yosef Livni, Israel's withdrawal of their ambassador was based primarily on Haider's insensitivity to Jewish history. Nationalism and xenophobia, he says, are elements of a broader topic which all of Europe must face together.
I want to make clear that our position rests basically on his comments and his reference to World War II, to the Waffen-SS, as I mentioned, and other matters. I think that all of us would recognize that the phenomena, the sociological phenomena of immigration, raises questions that have to be dealt with. And one can take exception to xenophobic attitudes, and I think rightly so. One should ask questions. I'm sure governments in this country, people ask questions about immigration in other countries as well. But I want to make it absolutely clear that since we are not a member of the European Union, our position rests on our history, the history of the Jewish people, the history of the Holocaust.
While Haider's comments were despicable, they are not significantly worse than any number of statements by other European and American politicians in the past few years. Pat Buchanan, for example, has praised the death squads of 1970s Argentina for their success and efficiency, using language remarkably similar to Haider's praise of the Nazis. Furthermore, Dr. Miltner claims that Haider's influence in his own country is overstated, never mind his supposed proclivity to becoming the next Adolf Hitler.
I think the personality of Haider is overvalued. First of all, he's not in the government, he's not in the national parliament, he's a governor of a small province, and he even resigned from his post of party leader. Also, I have to point out to my colleague from Israel, Haider came to New York and Washington, and he apologized for these statements in connection with the Third Reich. So, he made these statements in about 10 years ago. He apologized 3 or 4 months ago. You can believe him or not, but at least he took the step to apologize. I don't want to defend him. I didn't vote for his party. But I think you have to at least recognize the fact and and take note. It was reported on in the Washington Post, in New York Times, etc. And he's ready to come to Israel and apologize. He said it, but you don't even let him go there.
Although Jörg Haider has not taken a position in Austria's new national government and remains only as governor of the Carinthian state, Professor Andriolo disagrees that he is inconsequential. Expressing the fears of many, she says he still wields a significant amount of power behind the scenes.
I don't believe much in the argument that everything is fine because Haider is not in government. We shouldn't forget that his success of having led the Freedom Party from a 7% vote before he was chairing it to a 27% vote 15 years later is based on always having attacked the existing government, always having made his reputation on a often justifiable critique of the stagnating government. And the worst for somebody whose success is built on being the critical voice is to be in government, because then he cannot criticize anymore. So his move to remain outside of government is, I think, a very powerful tactical move, because he's not losing the connection.
Haider's support comes primarily from the working class, the bastion of support for anti-immigration, nationalist, and populist parties in recent European politics. By blaming immigration for job loss and increased crime, the Freedom Party was able to garner 27% of the country's votes last October. But the attitudes of lower-class Austrians are in many ways understandable, in part because of the influx of refugees from the Balkans, refugees from a war fought by the United States and Western Europe, who now lead the torrent of criticism against Austria. And regardless of political posturing, says Miltner, Austria must be judged on its actions alone.
Before this government was sworn in, the leaders of the two parties signed a declaration reaffirming the commitment, their commitment to democracy, human rights, and to the basic values of the European Union. The European Union, that is not the Union, but 14 members of the Union, even before the government was formed, announced measures reducing the bilateral relations in some way in case the Freedom Party would be included in the government. They didn't even know the government program and already said we are going to take certain measures if this party is included in the government. This step has also been taken without consulting Austria. Normally, when you have a community of member states, then you take decisions after discussion among all member states and not only 14. Of course, we realize that some countries in Europe and Israel, and to some extent also the United States, are worried about the inclusion of the Freedom Party in the new government. And we take these worries seriously, and we accept honest criticism. But I have to make one thing clear. First of all, I think most people who are criticizing today or have criticized during the last few weeks the Freedom Party probably have never read the program of the Freedom Party.
In the end, Austria as a nation will be judged by its actions. Without diminishing the seriousness of Haider's pro-Nazi remarks, it is safe to say that he is no more dishonest, no more insincere, and no less affected by the whims of public opinion than France's Chirac or our own President Clinton.
I think, you know, and I, that is, having watched Haider on numerous occasions, having read about every statement, every essay, every interview has given, books about, you know, this kind of stuff, I think the reason he's so popular in Austria is because, first of all, he's entertaining and not boring. And a lot of Austrian politicians and a lot of European politicians, a lot of American politicians are just dead boring. In Italy, you call that they were speaking politochese, I mean, this kind of political Chinese nobody understood. He obviously doesn't. He calls a spade, and people kind of like that. He is very good in reinventing himself. He used to be a German nationalist. He is now an Austrian patriot. He used to be fervently for the EU, now is skeptical of the EU. He is now fervently for NATO. Maybe next week he is fervently against NATO, who knows what. You kind of never know what to get from him. And it's kind of funny that, in a sense, most media in Austria, whether they are sympathetic or critical or hostile, they all kind of depend on him because he's always good for a line, and he knows exactly what kind of line to present. And quite frankly, as you pointed out, he will say one thing today and he will say the opposite tomorrow. And not only will he say the opposite tomorrow, but he will kind of convince you that he never said what he said yesterday.
Okay.
So in that regard, he is actually a very much of an American kind of politician.
That's all for this edition of Bruderhof Radio, a discussion of Jörg Haider, the new right-wing coalition government in Austria, and Western Europe's somewhat two-faced response to it. Our audio came from a recent panel discussion at the State University of New York at New Paltz. Participants were Hans-Georg Betz, a professor of European Studies at New York University, Dr. Harold Miltner, the Austrian Consul General in New York City, Josef Livni, an Israeli diplomat and former ambassador, and Professor Karen Andriolo of the State University of New York. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman and Ben Wright, with assistance from Pete Momsen. To order tapes and transcripts of Bruderhof Radio, call 1-800-778-8461. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love and love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For further information about the Bruderhof Communities, call 1-800-778-8461.